Welcome to the Finishing School Podcast, a discussion with and for women about identity, transitions through life stages, how to figure out who you want to be when you grow up, and all the things we didn't learn about in school. In short, it's a sometimes spiritual, sometimes silly look at how to be a grown woman. Whether you're becoming a mom for the first time or about to be an empty nester, modern womanhood and motherhood is complex, and the questions and conflicts we face with shifting roles and desires are many. Don't have your midlife crisis alone. Join me. I'm your host, Jessica Euler, and I'm stewarding this conversation on the brink of asking many of these questions in my own life. As my kids get older, my role as a mother changes, and as I have more time to reflect on who I am in the world, I'm surrounded by friends in the same boat. And I know if we're talking about these issues, odds are you are too. I am so excited to introduce one of my dearest and wisest friends, Monica Sheffy. This conversation is so rich, you guys, and I know it will speak to women in all phases of life. The reason I interviewed Monica is because we all need the perspective and encouragement of women who are a little bit further down the road from us. And with three grown adult children and 6 decades under her belt, Monica fits the bill, and she is a great voice for us. She's been such an encouragement to me in our entire friendship, in everything from parenting to marriage, even interior design. I've learned so much from her. In this episode, we cover all of those topics and more, but the juiciest part of the conversation for me has to do with our own silent underground becoming and blossoming, and how it's never too late to realize and offer your gifts to the world. In fact, it may take 60 years for them to be ready. Enjoy. Okay, I am here with my dear friend, Monica Sheffy, in her fabulous kitchen lounge. You should see this place. It's a cozy little love seat right off of her kitchen, and we've got windows surrounding us on a very gray day, but it feels light-filled in here.
It does.
It's lovely. Hi. Drinking espresso that the wonderful George made. Yes, our favorite barista. Well, tell us, hi. Tell us a little bit about, okay, well, first I just want to say, well, no, I won't say that right now. I would like to hear about the season of life that you're in and the thresholds and shifts that you are facing.
Like today.
Like in this period of your life.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the season of my life. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you want me to say a little bit about the phase of life that I'm in?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So I'm an older mom with 3 kids, and they are all out of the house. I have twin girls that are 29 and a son who's 22. And so I don't often talk about my age, but I'm coming into my own where I'm feeling a lot more confident about being older and saying I'm 59, turning 60 this year.
And you make it look good.
Thank you.
You do.
You're very kind. I think I never want to focus on age. I always want to focus on season. So that's why I feel like I borderline hide it. But really what I'm just trying to do is not make that the focal point and make like, what am I learning in this season? And what's this for? And I've been thinking about this interview and thinking about like, I want my life in the end. I look at the end a lot because my parents are older. You know, I think I want my life just to be poured out. I want to just skid across the finish line. I want to know that I have, you know, as a drink offering, I want to be completely poured out by the time that I'm done. And yet that means I have a lot to face in order to not hold back, you know? And so I think this is a season of facing fear as never before as I step into new realms. So here I am like, whoa, how do I make the most out of the season of life? Mm-hmm. And recently, I was sitting in a training for leaders, and the speaker talked about the fact that Your 60s and 70s are when everything converges and you have the most possibility to be your fullest self and offer, you know, it's just the richest offering. It's like a reduction sauce. You've been boiled down your entire life.
So beautiful.
And so it is so hopeful. And it's so really the way of God to esteem the things that the rest of the world is not. People my age are not esteemed. But so much has been poured into me and shaped and reduced, you know, so I believe I have unique things to offer, but I have to believe it before I can offer it. If I don't believe it, I have nothing to offer, right? So I do believe it. I've been exploring for probably the last 5 or 6 years the realm that I want to walk through. So I'm a creative person that has been in education my whole life, and art has been a part of it, but really I've been in education. And so I came to the point where I recognized I need to explore the creativity that is in me, it's a through line my entire life. Yeah. Since I was a very young girl, I can trace all the different ways I was trying to express the creativity inside of me. Through music, through instruments, through art, through poetry, through writing, you know, just all these different things. And so I've done some really intentional work in terms of just like reading and reflecting and asking people and taking tests and finding out what my strengths are and finding out, you know, this and that, so that I could best put them to use, I guess, in a way that is life-giving to me and the people around me. And as a person of faith, you know, a follower of Jesus, it's really important to me that I do what he made me for. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to not just dink around. I don't have that much time left, the way I look at it. You know, so, like, I'm not messing around. I'm really serious about only touching what he's leading me to touch. And so, but I am a fearful human. So I think this phase... threshold, I guess. And yeah. When I think of a threshold, I think a little bit about, we'll talk more about this later, but the business that I'm starting, because it has to do with homes and interiors and crossing thresholds. Yeah. And so here I am looking at what door am I going to walk through? Mm-hmm. And I am walking. I'm in the middle. I've got to step out the door. I still have a foot inside the house. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And part of that's just facing the fear of so many unknowns and being the person, like being responsible for the decisions that I make and being afraid to do the wrong thing. And so I'm just wanting more and more freedom from the fear of doing the wrong thing. And like, it's okay. If you do the wrong thing, then just do something else. I would tell somebody else that. Right. So I need to look in the mirror and tell myself, it's not that big a deal. Learn from your mistake. If you turn to the left and it didn't work, then just turn to the right. You know?
Yeah.
So, but practicing that myself.
It's harder.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder. And so you have to kind of go a few layers deeper to find out, now, why don't I believe that that's okay for me when it's okay for everyone else?
Yeah.
What is my identity based on?
You know? Right.
And how much am I concerned about what people think?
Yes.
You know? So.
Oh, that question.
Let's not talk about that.
Well, you know what's so interesting is, I mean, hearing you say all of that, I mean, first of all, it's so beautiful looking at the end and like wanting to be totally poured out and your life being a reduction sauce. Oh my gosh, that gives me so much hope, because I think it's easy at whatever stage you're at, but I think especially in your younger years, maybe to feel like this is my peak. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have it figured out right now, mm-hmm. or if I'm not doing the thing, mm-hmm. it's too late.
Yep.
And I think right now with, particularly with millennial culture, mm-hmm. there's so much pressure to have it figured out by the time you're 30 and be an entrepreneur and be, you know, doing whatever you're going to be famous for, you know, and it's ridiculous. Like, what happened to just living your right life well?
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say about that is all of these questions you're asking, all of these fears even, are things that we experience after we graduate from high school, after we graduate from college, mm-hmm. after we have children, when our children start to get older. And I think that's really freeing to hear mm-hmm. someone who's so much further down the path than me asking the same questions that I'm asking now. Mm-hmm. Because it's a reminder that we're not alone. And asking these questions does not mean we're doing it wrong.
No. I think in honor of the journey of facing fears, for example, you start very, very early. But instead of saying, oh, shoot, I didn't learn it, I'm still afraid, I'm just going a layer deeper. You know, so I'm not as afraid as I used to be, but I'm still afraid. I'm still afraid of some things, not afraid of others. Like, I'm not afraid to access people like you saying, hey, I don't get how to do this. I'm going to be really honest. Would you teach me? But I am, for whatever reason, hesitant to ask a professional. You know, like, I'm much more intimidated by titles and people that know so much that I'm going to look like an idiot and, you know, like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It sounds so silly and I want to be over it, but I can't get over it unless I walk through it.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. Like, I literally have to just be honest with myself and say, however much you don't want to be dealing with this, you are. This is the mix of who you are, and you must walk through this. So I also, you know, being older, I've learned, quit doing things by yourself. I've done so many things along life alone, me and my room and my book or whatever I'm doing to try to figure stuff out. Yeah. But the community of people around are, what a rich resource we are to one another. And so most of my people group is younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
There's hardly, I have a couple of friends that are older. I crave it. I crave people that are my age and beyond, but I so value that I have relationships with people that are younger, because I think my husband and I both believe that's why we feel younger, we act younger, we think younger.
Yeah,
we're just, you do. We just don't, totally that's why I don't talk about being 59, because I feel like, I don't know, I know I probably look like 59, but no, I don't feel like 59.
Right.
You know, I don't feel like I'm just about to walk into my 60s, and because in my mind, those, when I meet people that are that age, I'm like, whoa, do I have those attitudes? Do I talk about people like that? Am I stuck in that thinking? You know, like, a lot of it has to do with stuckness. And one thing I love about teenagers, to be honest, I still love teenagers, even though I'm pursuing something else, is that their eyes are, there's a twinkle in their eye because they don't know not to believe certain things. They don't know. We get jaded as we get older, and then we start locking down and our life shrinks. Yes. You see that in the elderly. Their life gets so small. They're trying to lock out everything that could challenge them.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, the way that you grow younger at heart is you keep the twinkle and you keep trying things that are new and you keep believing and hoping that something can change instead of going, nah, tried it last year, tried it the year before, forget it.
Yeah, I totally see that in you. And it's this openness to, well, one, it's a humility. I don't see you as someone who's like, well, I've walked through X, Y, and Z, so I'm the expert. You have so much wisdom to offer, and I love hearing what you have to say about just everything that I'm going through and parenting and marriage, and I have so much to glean from you. But I also see so much humility in your posture toward learning and toward recognizing, like, there's lots of things I don't know, and I'm going to seek out the people who do, and I need help, and I need people to come alongside, and I need community around me. We're going to do this together. And just that openness to, you are willing to learn new things, and you're doing so many new things with your life, which we're going to talk about. I want to ask you this question. How do you know where to focus your gifts? Or if you, when you have been pouring out your life in one area, whether it's education or staying home with your kids, and then your life opens up and you have these new possibilities in front of you, how do you even know what your gifts are and how to tap into them and what to do next?
There's a lot of ways. There's a lot of ways. One is just to be honest with yourself and be willing to reflect on what brings you life. I think it's very helpful to write those things down and to think about, you know, when I went to work yesterday, what were the things that really juiced me and what were the things that just sucked the life out of me? You know, what makes me want to run across the finish line and what makes me want to give up? It doesn't have to be a career. It can be a skill. It can be sitting in front of the computer, and this is true for me, and doing spreadsheets sucks the life out of me. Mm-hmm. I have no energy to do it. So I was an advisor at a community college and with international students. Anytime a student dropped in, I came to life. You know, I was like, yeah, come on in, sit down, let's talk. So because I'm a people person, yeah. I'm a 2 on the Enneagram, yeah. You know, I'm like, I get so much life out of listening to people and speaking into their lives. So yes. That matters to
You're
me.
So good at that.
It matters to me. And like, I want to be a good listener. I don't want to, and I don't want to offer band-aids. And so you have to be super attentive, but as soon as the door closes and I have to go back to the spreadsheet, I think, somebody get me out of here.
Yeah.
Get me out of here. And so I realized I have to create a life that, where I am able to do many more of the things that bring life to me and fewer of the things that don't. So other ways that you find out are you talk to people that know you, you know, and just tell them that you're on an exploratory journey and that you're trying to learn more about what you're made for, you know, what brings you life, what you enjoy, what impact you bring to the world. And so, you know, just creating some questions that you can ask friends, interviewing is very helpful. I think also paying attention to little buds that pop out of the earth. We talked about this before, like a little leaf that is coming up and not despising it, but seeing that something is starting to grow, paying attention to it, feeding it, watering it, and knowing that a lot of growth happens just like with a tuber plant, you know, like we were talking about. Bulbs or, you know, tubers, whatever, that are in the earth and in the dark, something is growing. And so when it begins to show itself, you can begin to notice it, but you have to have eyes to see. Mm-hmm. And so being willing to face your fear about, is that something I'd be good at or not? And just to begin to nurture it, you've got to practice and see, is this something that brings me life or isn't it, you know? And do it a little bit and find out.
Yeah. Can we talk about this in relation to motherhood?
Yeah.
You know, when I think about having young kids and asking these questions about identity, who am I? It feels so often like our identities get set aside as moms of young kids.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that and your experience raising kids and what your life was like when your kids were younger? I mean, even up until high school, because there's so many needs still. But talk about that a little bit. I feel like there's no room for those questions almost.
Being a parent is absolutely sacrificial. If you ever thought that getting married, you know, once you, the shine wore off, that was sacrificial, just have a kid or two or three. Mm-hmm. And then you'll realize, oh, what have I gotten myself into? One of the things that tends to happen is you lose yourself. I remember thinking that we had twins when I was 29. And I wasn't exactly a kid person. I wasn't known for like, give me your kids, I love kids.
Here's two.
Here's two. I had a breakdown, not a true breakdown, but you know, an emotional like leakage at some point where I was like, I'm going to be staying home for the rest of my life. Everything that I used to love, I can't do anymore. I can't leave the house. I can barely get a shower.
Nope.
It felt like I would describe it to people like this. This is the dark part of parenting. This isn't the grand part. I have a lot to say about the grand part. But I felt like when you have the flu, you feel like you're going to have it forever. It felt like that with little ones. I felt like I can't do anything that I used to care about.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I couldn't figure out how. All I could figure out how to do was survive, you know, and help them survive. So as my capacity grew, so that view changed as I started realizing, well, they are going to gain independence. They are gaining independence. I can actually, you know, get a sitter from time to time. And, you know, I can begin to reattach to the things that I might have let go of. I think that there is a bit of a demand in the beginning to let go of some things that you're reorienting, because you used to focus all around yourself or yourself and your husband.
Yes.
You can't do that with children because they need you all the time. And so you begin to like... I think there's a good thing and a bad thing happening. You kind of lose yourself, which is sort of bad. But on the other hand, it's kind of good because we're full of ourselves.
Yeah.
And being full of yourself isn't going to get you. It doesn't. It never got me to where I wanted to go.
Yeah.
You know, just filling up with more of me, that is not the answer. Yeah. And so whatever I used to do that I thought brought me life, to come to the crash to realize that's not it. That's not it. Having the freedom to get in a car, being able to play my guitar whenever I wanted, you know, having the ability to go shopping when I want, that's not it. That's not the essence of who I am. That's what I was able to do with my time before, and I can't anymore.
Yeah.
So it's good to press into the pain and the suffering and the loneliness of being a parent at home and find out, well, I'm in a little bit of a crisis here. My mind feels like it's shriveling up, you know, because I'm not really having adult conversations. What does that mean? What does that say about who I am? Who am I? You know,
right.
It's really good to ask those questions in the middle of it all, because the more you wrestle, the more you find answers.
Yeah.
And I think that was a real time of wrestling for me.
Yeah. I can relate to that.
Yeah. Alongside of it, my capacity grew. And so I was able to do more things, but those things still, they gave me more freedom, but they didn't necessarily give me life, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't believe that you can find life without finding God. I don't believe you can. I don't think we were made for that. The dimension of our spirit is so huge that if you don't pay attention to it, you're going to have to at some point. And if you don't, the deficit in your life is massive. Mm-hmm. And so I think everybody craves, whether they know what they're craving or not, there's this craving inside for who am I? Why am I on this earth? Why does it matter? Who does it matter for? Those are the big questions.
Yeah.
And so motherhood does drive you to your knees, right?
It does.
And in the middle of it all, you wrestle with, well, what am I here for? Am I just changing diapers? Am I just driving kids to school? Am I just serving their needs?
Yeah.
And that whole just where it has to fall away.
Yes.
You know, because it's so much more than that, but you're becoming and you just don't know it. This is when I'd say you're buried.
Right.
You're like in the earth and
yes.
you're becoming, but you don't know it because all of your services to others.
Right.
But your values are changing, you're being shaped. And we were talking earlier about the convergence of all of the things that you've experienced in life kind of coming out when you're older. It all begins to come together and make sense. It's it's amazing to see how all these experiences over all these decades are beneficial in a multitude of ways that I could have never expected when I was younger, and I was learning them one by one by one.
Right, you never got the big picture roadmap
you
of
can't.
Like, you're going to do this, then this, then this,
you
and
can't.
Then here's going to be the payoff, and it's all going to come together.
Mm-mm.
And I think there's a place of trust that you just have to watch it all unfold. And what's interesting is, yes, those years where you feel buried, when you start to emerge, you don't necessarily recognize yourself anymore.
No.
Because
you've changed. Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of one of the central questions I want to explore, you know, is when you face yourself, how do you do that? How do you look yourself in the mirror and know who you are when it's so different from who you used to be?
Mm.
And
I would say there's not a moment.
Yeah.
It's a journey where one little leaf point pokes out and you're like, huh, what's that? Is that me? And then you nurture it and water it and see it rise up a little bit further, and another leaf pokes out, and it's really the process of becoming. And the becoming happens over time. One of the things I would say that I was convicted about is that all that I poured into my kids and I said to them, I was not saying to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I believed they could do anything. I didn't believe I could do anything.
Yeah.
I believed that they could, that their gifts were valuable and valid in this world, and that they were responsible to explore those. But I couldn't tell myself the same thing, even though I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I wasn't telling myself that. I just experienced the bad fruit of it later, where I'm like, how come I don't believe what I'm telling them?
Yeah.
And then they've taken off and they've become everything and more. They have, I mean, this whole process of parenting older kids is like, they outshine you.
Mm-hmm.
And they should. That was our whole dream, is that they would become so much more than we ever were. But when it's happening, it's painful. Because you realize, oh man, everything I told them and then some is like bearing fruit in their life because of God's faithfulness to them and because they believe it. Yeah. And so as a mother, you go through like season after season of like sort of this internal personal reckoning and mm-hmm. sort of crisis. And if you mm-hmm. face it, you will grow through it and you will find your core sense of value and where your feet are planted. Mm-hmm. And like for me, I have a crossover particularly with my girls because they're in the design world and that's where I'm headed. And so they are so highly trained and skilled and esteemed in their work world.
Yeah, they're amazing.
That it could be intimidating to mm-hmm. me as someone who feels like in some ways a relic. I still can't figure out that I need technology to serve me, but I'm serving it because I don't get it. You know, and so you see this in my parents' generation. They still can't figure out how to use the VCR. I remember that conversation of like, I was so impatient. You push this button here, you know. But now, like, as I'm older and I can't figure, I mean, stuff's coming at it.
You can't change. I can't keep up. You cannot keep up. Yeah.
But I was having a conversation with another older mom yesterday on the phone while I was cleaning our Airbnb. And she said, I feel like a relic. I feel like one of those old geeky computers, you know, that's just clunking along. And I'm trying to get somebody to show me something fast and whizzy and high speed, you know, somebody in their 20s. And I was recognizing as she was saying that the great thing about just acknowledging that as people who are older is that it will happen to every generation. Yeah. Everything that's slick to them now is going to, their kids are going to laugh at. Oh, yeah. The next generation is going to be, I can't believe you did it that way. That was so slow. That's so stupid, whatever. But the value is that we offer has nothing to do with any of those things.
Right.
Like what my kids and their generation are looking for from someone like me has nothing to do with that. They can get it from each other.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with
that. That's so true.
And so, I mean, I'm spinning all over the place, but I remember this conversation of, I did a design project for my daughter in New York and we redid a space on her roof and she wanted to do it because she wanted a gathering space that would be refreshing to her and her friends. And so we planned it so that the whole thing would culminate. I would fly over there and it would culminate with a party where she would have these friends come. And so when that happened, I got a chance to interact with them and talk to them and like learn from them. And most of them were designers. And I just saw this longing in their eyes to talk to somebody that was older that could tell them it's going to be okay.
Yes.
You know, because they're all people in New York that are young and up and coming. They all move there from somewhere else.
Yeah.
They're all away from their families. Yeah. Every single one of them. They're not from New York.
Yeah.
Like, at least not her friends. But it was so enlightening to me to see below the surface at what they were really asking and what they were really needing. And just that assurance of somebody that's older that can tell them, you know, that what matters in this journey and what doesn't, you know, and what they should pay attention to and what they should ignore, the voices they should listen to and those they should like turn their back on, mm-hmm. you know, just those kind of, they're just, I don't know. They, being in a homogenous group of people is no good.
Yeah.
You cannot just listen to your peers, even as a mother.
Right.
I would say, do not just listen to people who are raising kids that are your kids' age.
Yeah.
You've got to go a generation ahead
and
get somebody to talk to you backward.
That is why I love talking to you about parenting. Because I'm like, this really is so hard. I don't know what I'm doing. And you're like, oh, yeah, well, that's normal.
Normal. That's what I usually say. Well, that's normal.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I want to hear you talk a little bit about, speaking of parenting.
Yeah, yeah.
What would you tell yourself, your younger self, now, you know, your teen age mom self.
Yeah, yeah.
Or mom of teens.
Yeah, mom of teens. Boy, I'm glad I wasn't a teen mom.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like our kids get older.
Yeah.
And our role changes, you know, just when we feel competent and just when we feel like, okay, we kind of know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We've got some ground rules down. We're consistent and we, you know, have established our family culture, and then it totally changes when they become teenagers and your role shifts. Mm-hmm. And then it's even more so with adult kids. I can't even imagine. Well, I mean, I'm beginning to dip my toes in that water and it's lovely.
It is.
And it's so
different.
Fun.
It's really different.
So different. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very different role. Well, from a coaching standpoint, if I were to say, bring me back around if you wanted to hear something else, but the first thing that comes to mind as a mom that I would say to myself as a mom raising teens is give the balance of power over earlier. Let your kid, when I look back, I think, man, I wish I would have let him fail earlier. I wish I would have kept my hand out of some things.
Let them fail.
Especially starting late elementary, when their bodies are safe, you know, and they've kind of got that, they've got a handle on managing themselves. There needed to be more shift toward them having an opportunity to fail and bear the consequences so that they could learn when the stakes were low. Because the many parents that I talk to now that didn't do that, their teenage kid or 20-something kid is in the ditch. Because it's so serious when they're older and they aren't owning their life. They didn't own it because you didn't let them. The reason you didn't let them is because you thought it was loving.
And you were trying to protect them.
Yeah. You thought it was loving to finish their paper for them.
Oh, dear.
Right. Cause, so that it would be on time. So they wouldn't get a bad grade. So that it wouldn't reflect on their GPA. So they wouldn't not get into the college that they are hoping for. And so are you.
Right.
So to understand that that's not love. That love is actually to let them suffer. And to love them compassionately through the suffering.
And the consequences and that come.
My husband is phenomenal at identifying with our kids' failures. So the first thing he does when we have to have a hard conversation is talk about when he did that. Mm. Or when he does that now. Or whatever the thing is, he's really quick to identify with it, which is very disarming. And then it's a lot easier to talk about the thing that is going on. But anyway.
He's so wise. You both are.
Thank you. That's very kind. That's kinder than we deserve. But I mean, I appreciate that about him. And I feel very challenged because that's not, he's more humble than I, he's way humbler than I am. He's way quicker to admit his wrong and to take responsibility for it and ask for forgiveness, apologize. He's way quicker. But anyway.
So how do you navigate? Okay, so giving over control, letting them fail earlier, letting them kind of take on the burden of their life, essentially, and taking it off of your shoulders.
Right.
They have to care more than we do.
Right.
But how do you walk that out as they become adults? And how does your role change?
Yeah.
And what do we do now as moms of younger kids, maybe moms of kids in high school, to really set our adult kids up for success? Like, what are you seeing as a mom of adult children that you feel like, okay, this is the foundation that we laid that's paying off now, and you have this fruit?
This may not be the best analogy because I was not ever in sports. However, I was a cheerleader, so I did watch.
I can't believe you were a cheerleader.
Just 1 year. Okay, maybe two. I can't believe it either. When I think about sports and I think about, like, if you were to put a referee and a coach in the same body, that's kind of what parenting looks like when kids are young. Yeah. You're on the court with them. Mm-hmm. You're actually out there with them. You're calling, like, if you think about what a coach does, they're calling shots and the ref is like, you know, keeping the rules and all that kind of stuff, just keeping things straight.
Yeah.
But the older your kids get, the more you need to get off the court. You know, and really the coaching comes from the sideline. So I think about this a lot. Am I coaching from the sideline? Am I offering, like, especially as someone whose kids are out of the house, I cannot offer what they don't want to hear.
Oh, yeah.
So how do I discern that? What if I want them to hear it? So there has to be an invitation, but the only way that I know if the invitation is in there is through having a genuine relationship with them.
Yeah.
And it's not, it is a friendship, but it's not a friendship. It will never be a straight friendship because there will always be
peers.
They won't, nor do I want to be.
Yeah.
So my hope and goal this is true for both of us, that we would have a lifelong relationship with our kids so that through all the bumps and all the bruises and all the hurt and, you know, all the forgiveness and all of that that's happened, that we would still want to be together, and we would want to interact, and we would want to have a genuine relationships later in life.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful, honestly, to God to say, we do.
Yeah.
We absolutely do. And, but here's the thing that's changed. The coaching is mutual. So I go to my son sometimes for advice, and he comes to me. And I go to my girls. Sometimes it's professional. Sometimes it has to do with design. But sometimes it just has to do with life.
Yeah.
I have a very, very, very close friend who recently died and through taking his life. And it was so traumatic to me that I felt like I couldn't face my feelings about that. I just kept going through the, who can I serve? Who can I take care of? You know, how can I help? You know, but so I carved out some time to be completely alone, and I felt so stuck. And it was because I was mad and hurt, and I needed to talk to God about it, but I didn't want to.
Yeah.
So I called my daughter, Chelsea, and I said, honey, I don't know what to do. And I told her what I was feeling, and she was so wise in what she told me. She was so wise, and she was so compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I said, can you pray for me? And she said, yeah. So she prayed for me, and it just unlocked whatever that thing was. I can't remember what it was, but the one thing that she said just completely, it had to do with honesty. It had to do with the freedom just to be weak, you know?
Oh, man.
And so to get that coaching from somebody that you've poured that into, I'm sure I've told her that tons of times growing up.
Yeah.
But it's in her, and it's a part of her. And so I could have called any of them and probably heard that.
Yeah.
But I think you have to develop a two-way relationship where you show as much respect for them as they do for you.
Yeah.
And so you see yourself when you're a parent of a younger child as having all the answers.
Right.
You're their safety. You're their epicenter, you know.
Yeah.
That needs to start shifting a whole lot earlier.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't mean that that I don't believe in kids running the household. I'm not saying that, you know, oh, they have all the power and they should be telling you know, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that the fruit of doing it responsibly and doing it wisely over the years is that by the time they are up and out of the house, you actually want to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Like, you can't wait for a phone call.
Yeah.
And they're not going, oh, brother, it's mom again. It's like, oh, hi, mom, what's going on? You know, what's going on in your life? And, you know, so it's really a two-way pursuit.
I love that. Yeah. I want that for sure. And I feel that need to shift, in a way, shifting the authority.
Yeah.
You know, or just maybe letting it go a little bit. And letting it be less about, you have to do it this way. You have to, you know, these are our rules. Like, I feel like we are more willing, Justin and I, to, there's just things you have to let go. Like, we know more now that we have to choose our battles.
Oh,
and there's just so many things that don't matter for the sake of maintaining relationship.
Right.
That's right. I'm not going to get after you about every little thing, you know, because I want to maintain the relationship. I don't want to be that nagging mom that's telling you to clean up your room.
Yep.
I'll go on a rant every now and then. Yep. I go on a real good rant, but I see that need to shift.
I spend a lot of time assuring parents of teenagers that there are many things your teenager will never learn in your house. They have to learn when they're
gone. That's so good.
So let it go.
That's so freeing.
I gave up on the room cleaning thing. All of my kids were messy.
Yeah.
And they're all clean now.
Yeah.
Because they live with the results of the choices they make, and they've all chosen that they to be clean because they like to.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing to them. So, but they didn't discover that until they were gone.
Yes.
They have to have somebody lay off.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand when we do get confused about what the battles are when our kids are around all the time. And we just homogeneously yell at everything. Like, homework and this, and you didn't do this.
Yes, and you ate all of this. That's my big thing.
When the relationship becomes all about rules, it's
then nobody's happy.
You got to step back.
You're miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got to reset, and you need to take response. You need to model asking forgiveness.
Yes.
It won't be used against you. It will change them because they realize that's the door out.
Yes.
We're all in a tangle. And that's the exit door right there, is to ask, to admit that you've gone off the rails and you're way too focused on things that don't matter.
I think I did that a couple weeks ago. I think it was actually after Randy died, and I was feeling so out of control emotionally.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize
yeah.
how out of control I felt. And I came into my house and like, I think I'd been gone for a couple of days or something and everything was out of place. And, you know, there was shoes in the entryway and whatnot. And just, I lost it.
Yeah.
And it was because I was dealing with something else emotionally that yeah. I didn't know how to process.
Yeah.
And it just all came out.
Yeah.
And I was like sobbing uncontrollably. And I had to apologize to my kids and say,
let them know why.
Really, yeah. Yeah.
Let them know.
I think they knew. I mean, I told them, you know, but it was an opportunity to process together.
Everything's an
opportunity. And to show,
let's be honest.
To show like, this is a weighty, dark thing.
Yeah.
And these emotions affect us and they affect other people.
Yeah.
And here's how it's playing out. And I'm sorry. And I need help. And I need love. And I need grace.
So good.
I need space to be alone. And I need you to pick up your stuff. But everything is an opportunity.
I wanted to say one more thing about the older kid thing. One thing that came to mind is that you must see your kids as individuals, just like you see your friends as individuals. And so you must study them.
Yeah.
And become an expert in how they are uniquely them, because your relationship with them will have, it will be nuanced depending on who they are.
That's so true.
My mom said, I just spanked you all the same. You're all guilty as far as I was concerned. You know, like she didn't know.
One kid gets in trouble, everybody gets in trouble.
Turn around, bend over. You know, so it's true. I mean, she was from Germany, but she did treat us that way and she was proud of it. And I'm like, I'm not parent.
Yeah,
I don't believe in that. But the thing is, as you become a student of your kids, you will know what to pursue in the future. So, for example, my son he's brilliant. He's phenomenally smart. He's insightful, but he's every strength he has is completely different than mine.
Mm.
So we don't naturally intersect in the way that we think, in the way we operate, in our interests, none of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So really looking, he and I both have really looked for what do we share that we can enjoy? And we both recognized it's cooking.
Oh,
yeah. And as for him, he's living on his
own.
In the last, since he's been living on his own.
Since he's been out of the house. Mm-hmm. I love that.
So that's a demo on how some of the stuff doesn't happen till later. But as he has been shopping for himself and making food, he's come back and asked to learn how to do certain things. But also he's been watching cooking shows and now he's like, can we learn new things? Like and so we're cooking regularly. We're trying to do it weekly. It's hard to keep that commitment, but we're trying to do things that neither one of us has made, you know, make things neither one of us has made. It's not just me teaching him.
Right.
It's us exploring.
It's a shared experience.
Like, what would this Indian dish be like? Or why don't we practice these techniques? And, you know, if it fails, it fails. Like, we just made pozole and it wasn't very good. I mean, I was like, what happened? I know I had the wrong pepper, but it just was like, I've been doctoring it ever since. And now it's too spicy. I can't even eat it.
I love it.
You know, but so we both kind of shrugged our shoulders and said, well, That didn't go so well, but we'll try something else.
Not everything
so
works.
Just that whole idea of really become a student of your kids
and
learn about where you intersect relationally so that you can continue that.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That one-on-one. I think that's such a good point because I know when my kids were younger and I had three little ones at home and then, you know, later on four, I just, because it felt like survival mode so often, I felt like I had to parent en masse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was just like everybody got the same consequence. Everybody got the same
food portion.
Like just here and sending it out to the masses. Like, this is what I have to offer. Take it. Get your portion.
So much love in that.
Oh, man. Like, it was just really hard to individuate, you know, and to dole out like what each kid needed at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, over time, you see how interacting with one kid this way is not going to work with the other kid.
No.
They won't respond to it.
No.
It will shut them down.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, and we have definitely seen that probably starting in middle school or even earlier, you know, just we approach each kid totally differently because we know their personalities.
Mm-hmm.
And what works with one will not work with the other one.
It's good.
The fourth one we do not have figured out. We do not know what is going to work with him. He is an enigma, and he leaves us scratching our heads.
You are a student of his right
now. Oh my gosh, are we ever.
Yeah.
Love him to bits. I want to hear about where you're headed now in this new season, this new threshold, exploring these new gifts, and
Thank
you're launching out into this whole new thing, which I'm so excited about.
Thank you. Yeah. So I was talked earlier about creativity. You know, I've had my hand in a lot of different things over the years, but have really decided, settled on the fact that I want to put energy into serving people by improving the spaces they live in. And it's really about serving, and that's the thing that makes me go. It's not just about beauty. Beauty matters to me a mm-hmm. lot. But yeah. really, if I'm not serving somebody, then I'm going to fizzle, because mm-hmm. I find the most satisfaction in impacting people's lives for the long haul. So about 6 years ago now, Holly Campbell and I found that we're friends, and we found that we both shared an interest, and the interest is in redesigning people's spaces. So that just means that we're working within their homes. They're working sometimes with their things. We infuse new things, new ideas, thinking outside the box on how to use spaces. Like, we're sitting in the kitchen basically on a couch.
it's working.
It's going to work for now. You know, yeah. maybe it'll be different, you know, in the future, but it will be different. Entering into people's worlds and their lives and helping them solve problems that yes. frustrate them, that keep them stuck in the mud, that cause them to basically hate their homes. And yeah. you interviewed Lisa Johnson, and I haven't even told her this yet. Hope you're listening, Lisa. I don't think I told her, but we just redid a simple little space, gave her some advice. She actually did all the work in her front yard.
Yeah.
And it was so powerful for her, because it created an outdoor room, quote unquote, mm-hmm. that she and her kids could use, that when I talked to her about it later, she was just like out of breath telling me about how she had been so frustrated in her home, and she didn't like it there anymore, and she didn't even want to be there. But she said, you guys helped me fall in love with my home again.
Yeah.
And so that is my aim, is to help people fall in love with their homes.
That's so good.
Because home is a huge part of where we restore and refresh. Yeah. We get inspiration. We rejuvenate. Yeah. We connect.
Yeah.
So many great things happen at home. It's really important.
It's so important.
And it's so unique from person to person.
Right.
And so Holly and I have been just playing around by doing this on the side for a lot of different people, a lot of different contexts, yeah, bigger, smaller.
I've benefited.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. We've worked for you a little bit. With you, actually. Yeah. It's really a more working with than yeah. for people. Because yeah,
I think that's what makes it so unique, is you're yeah. not coming in and saying, here's yeah. our design for mm-hmm. your space.
Yeah.
You're really asking yeah. questions yeah. about, how do you feel about your space now?
Yep.
How do you want to live yeah. in this space? How do you want to feel? Yes. How do you want to use this
room? That's exactly right.
And the idea of helping people solve problems is really crucial.
It is.
It's very central, because yeah. I think often in home design and when we're setting up our spaces, and it's not just decorating. Like, decorating is like,
yeah,
it can feel the superficial part of it, mm-hmm. but you're also very good at that, because that all ties together. It all affects how you feel in the space.
Right.
It affects everything
yep.
when you walk into a home.
Yep.
And it's just easy to feel stuck and not even know how to use a space, or how to,
yep.
or just that it's not working and you don't know why.
Yep.
And you guys are so good at coming in and saying, here's why it's not working, and here's yep. some ideas to make it work.
Well, we also learn from clients that we've worked with. So, for example, our first job ever has been our favorite. Because it pushed the levels of creativity to the nth degree, and that was working for Lance Kagi. And there's a couple things I wanted to say about that were, those two taught us in our process many things, but one is they exposed the barrier of what was wrong. Like, they helped us to start asking questions, mm-hmm. because we recognized we needed to in order to do this job, because that one was a yeah. surprise. They did leave for 3 days,
right.
and we just had full freedom to do whatever we wanted, but I needed to know what was the goal,
right.
you know? And so, the goal was identified as having a space that they felt really comfortable opening the door, because they're communal people,
yeah.
you know, and they're kind of famous around here, you know, like,
yeah.
you know, he is, as far as, just making an impact in our city. And so
yeah.
they wanted to feel like their space was really welcoming, and they could open the door to whoever dropped by. As mm-hmm. people did, instead of feeling like, oh, I don't want them to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to analyze what was going on there. What were the reasons that they didn't feel the freedom to open their door? So once we got to the bottom of all that, the reflection afterwards from Lance is also kind of written on my soul now.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, you guys changed our posture toward people that, toward our family, friends, and strangers. Mm-hmm. You changed our posture by making us more open and communal.
Wow.
Because of the space that you created, you know, it is welcoming, but I also maintain it tells their story.
Yeah.
Their story was, and you've been in that space, so you've seen it both before and after, but their story was kind of hidden. And not the things in their home didn't reflect the things that they cared about. They were functional, but they didn't tell the story of this couple. And now the stuff that matters to them is on display, and mostly for them.
Yeah.
But also so that when people come, they can you know, they're very comfortable talking about their world. And if somebody says, what is that? You know, what is that print? What does that mean? You know, it leads to conversations, or maybe people don't even do that. I don't know, but it takes them deeper into their life. You know, it's just, everything's a reflection,
about,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think like you, in photographing people in their spaces, you recognize that space tells stories.
Absolutely.
And space is very powerful. And if you change the way spaces work, you change the way people interact. And that's the part I'm really fascinated by.
Yeah.
It's confounding in some ways. Holly's really good at thinking at things from many angles. And so I love working with her. But I want to keep pressing into solving that equation for people so that they fall in love with their home. They can't wait to come home. It's not just that they're always looking for an escape. They're like, oh, yeah, I get to go home.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, how many people say that?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, man. And, you know, you've got that stuff that weighs on you. Yeah. Oh, that office is such a mess all the time.
Right. And it affects our souls.
It does.
I think that's what's so interesting about space and the way it's set up. It really affects our souls.
It does.
I was just talking about this in my last interview about how, you know, if a space is cluttered or if it's just, if it doesn't feel good, it affects our creativity. It affects our ability to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I see this all the time in my office. If it's, you know, it's kind of, it becomes a dumping ground for people don't know where to put something, put it on mom's desk, which makes me so mad. But I can't think, I can't be creative. I can't feel the freedom.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the physical space is a representation of the creative and soul space. You know, if there's no physical margin and room, there's no room for new ideas and new energy to work and to flow out of me.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's very impactful what you guys are doing.
When somebody moves into a new space, I always urge them, don't be in a hurry to buy a bunch of stuff and fill this place up. Let this space speak to you. Because you'll start realizing, man, I wish I had a chair to sit by this window because the lighting here is so beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm a freak about, I'm just a fiend when it comes to light.
Me too.
Natural light. And then also color.
I hover by light.
Yeah.
In my house. Just put me by a window
all
year long.
And we need that. I mean, our bodies crave that, right?
Yeah.
And especially in the Northwest. But
yeah,
I think it's important to be patient and let spaces tell you what you need. But also, I think that we beat ourselves up a lot when things are either a mess or you're unhappy with it. Like, there's so much bad juju. It's like you come home and you're like, oh, I hate this entry. The coats are spilling out everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
And you just go from one area to another that you hate. I hate this.
Yeah,
I hate this. And like I was just talking to, we're not organizers. So we will need to partner with an organizer. But I really hate our pantry. It's so uninspiring. So, but shouldn't you be inspired by your ingredients? Like, if you're going to cook, it's a barrier to me.
I could see how it would be.
It is.
Probably if you open your pantry and you feel that,
I can't even
that
find
little
anything.
Grumble, that
every time.
Yes.
Yeah.
It affects how you cook your meals.
Yeah. And then
every
I keep rebuying
day.
The stuff that's in there because I don't want to look for it because it's all buried, right?
You have five things of spaghetti
sauce. That's right.
So
because beauty matters so much to our souls, I need beauty to be part of my food world too, to re-inspire myself about cooking.
Yes.
So, and that's a journey I go through over and over because I get so uninspired.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I need help. But
But
anyway, so that's what I'm doing. The business is called Anatomy of Home. We just got a landing page, anatomyofhome.com, so you can take a look at some before and after photos. We have Anatomy of Home Redesign on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I do have a Facebook page that has nothing on it yet.
Coming soon.
Yes, coming soon. I'm in the middle of many coming soons.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of side projects.
I imagine by the time this podcast launches, you may be well under on your way.
Good.
With Anatomy of Home.
I hope so.
Yeah, I want everybody to know about what you do because I think it's you are making design accessible to people in a new way. So it's different than, I mean, we all wish we could like hire an incredible designer to, you know, furnish our homes perfectly and beautifully and spend thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars, right? I mean, that's what interior designers do sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not accessible for everyone.
No.
But we all need well thought out, beautiful design in order to function well in our homes and in order to love them.
Yeah.
And you're doing that. And you're making it accessible to people who wouldn't normally be able to do that.
And that's because, and I didn't talk about this, we shop your house and help find stuff that is in the wrong room and move it. Like, wait a second, that would be beautiful in here.
Yeah.
We definitely thrift all about it.
Love
you know,
it.
We upcycle, we're, especially Holly's very good at this, we're taking something and remaking it.
Yeah.
We will shop anywhere from Target to, you know, IKEA to all the way up. I mean, we've, one of the houses that's actually on the, it's in a photo on the landing page, shows a view looking down on a room. And in that room is stuff from CB2, from Pottery Barn, from Target, from Goodwill, from Tree. I mean, there is everything
furniture.
From, there's something free. There's there's definitely a Goodwill
wine
rack. So there is a huge mixture of all that kind of stuff, but you cannot tell. There's a late 60s, early 70s marble pink table that we found at a vintage store. I think we found it in Fife. Can't remember. But the creativity that it takes to mix like that and to find things is something that makes both of us like we just light up. We're let's
too.
Go.
That's all my curbside style. Mix and match, baby.
It's fun to find
it's
stuff.
It's so good.
Too,
yeah. You guys are really good at sourcing things that way and thinking outside of the box.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, essential if you don't have millions of dollars to spend. Even if you do, you know, it adds so much character and so much story and so many different layers. Out of the box, you know, high-end, all done up, is not really that interesting most of the time.
Yeah.
Things with story and character and of different provenance, I think, add a richness to space.
And
I mean,
also
it's just like our lives.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there can be really, there can be some ugly stuff in your house, but depending on where you create the center of interest, it just disappears.
Yeah.
It's like a zit on your face. You know, like... Put on some nice earrings.
Concealer on
it. Put on some nice earrings and, you know,
it doesn't... Put a throw pillow on it. Some nice fabric. Oh, I love it. Okay, well, I'm very excited about this new part of your journey, and I want you to keep me posted on it.
I will. Absolutely.
And I might have
a partner somehow.
Might have a couple jobs for you.
Good. Good.
Thank you so much for this. This was all
it was fun.
Very rich.
Mm-hmm. It was fun and easy. Thank you for making it easy to talk to.
Well, you're easy to talk to. You have a lot of good things to say.
High five.
High five.
Oh, isn't she the best? Honestly, getting to have these conversations makes me so thankful for the women in my circle, in my community, the experience and wisdom they offer. Really, I am looking forward to someday expanding the circle of women I interview for this podcast, but just among my friends and acquaintances, I have an embarrassment of riches. If you want to know more about Monica and Holly's design and redesign services, you can get a taste of their work at anatomyofhome.com. It's under construction, but you can get a sense of what they do and see a little bit of their portfolio. And you can also find more of their work on their Instagram page, Anatomy of Home. Let me read you something from their website. And I'm telling you, this is a service that we all need and it's accessible for everyone. This is on their about page. Are you frustrated with your home's look and feel, its limited layout, misfit furnishings, or uninspired colors? Do they drag you down? We get it. We believe the spaces we live in are powerful, and by changing spaces, we change lives. We begin by shopping your home, rearranging what you own, and giving your tired furnishings and colors new life. We incorporate thrifted, upcycled, and new items to create fresh spaces you can't wait to come home to. We work in small or large homes, inside and out. We also redesign rental spaces and stage furnished homes so they'll sell for big bucks. You can find them in Tacoma, Washington, and beyond, and they will help you fall in love with your home again, I promise. Having worked with them myself on a couple rooms, I can tell you they're so fun and easy to work with, and they come up with creative and affordable ideas that you would never think of on your own. Go check them out. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. If you enjoyed it and know a friend who would love it, please, please, please pass it on. Word of mouth is how we can grow this community. Thanks again.